This is Pocket Presents, powered by Sleeper. Here we go, back with another episode of Pocket Presents. Tyler, good Thursday morning to you. How's the weather?
Snowing up here in Minneapolis, if you really want to know. Beautiful weekend in Chicago. I was down there for the Bears game, and we were talking about it before, but I can't imagine being a fan of a team that makes me react the way the Bears fans reacted to them missing that field goal, because you know, the entire game you're going back and forth with people sitting around you, and then that field goal gets blocked and you almost feel bad talking trash because the dejected, expecting look they had on their face, the look that they had where they're like, we knew something like this was going to happen, was, I mean, it was great and sad at the same time. As a Packers fan, it was great, but as a,
you got to pour one out for these Bear fans, man, dude. It's, you know, I wanted them to at least be okay this year. I don't like just hate Chicago. I wanted them to be competitive, and I guess you can call that a competitive game, but their record's not competitive at all.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, getting a field goal blocked. I was on the other side of that a week prior. I had money on the Denver Broncos to beat the Chiefs. And so I knew what full deflating feeling that was. And then this week I had money on the Packers, and I knew how exciting it was that I won. And then I ended up right there in the middle of, I didn't make any money because it was a wash between both games, and I had the high and the low. So like, I felt like this full spectrum of feelings that Bears fans at this point in time just feel a lot of negative. They don't get the full spectrum ever. It's just dark, gloomy, and it's only getting colder in Chicago.
It is. There was a bit of hope in the stands. You know, I was hearing the people around me talking about Caleb Williams, and it seems like games like these help forward the cause of Matt Eberflus getting fired sooner rather than later. Yeah. And you have a young quarterback to be excited about. I mean, Caleb Williams played well last week. So I think there is a bit of hope, but man, it's got to suck in the moment.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, honestly, it might have been the best of everything for them. If you look back 5 years from now, it's probably going to get Eberflus fired. Caleb Williams still probably going to be there. You might get Ben Johnson from the Lions. You never know. You never know. This offseason is going to be crazy, but we've got action to talk about this week. Also, we have a Hall of Fame segment. Is that what I'm reading?
We do. The Hall of Fame semifinalists were just announced. I wanted to get your thought on some of these top names, because there's going to be a lot of debate. Specifically, I'm seeing Eli Manning, Luke Kuechly, who had a shorter than average career. You have guys like Steve Smith Sr., Earl Thomas, Adam Vinatieri. And these are names that are making me feel old because I remember these guys playing. What are your thoughts on who gets in the Hall of Fame writ large and then some of these guys specifically?
Okay. The first few that I heard Adam Vinatieri, Hall of Famer, most clutch kicker of all time in big games. Then you had Eli Manning. Ooh, I almost like made a face. I may have made a face. I don't look at Eli Manning like a Hall of Fame quarterback. Eli Manning had a couple good playoff runs, which means a couple good games plus Super Bowls, where in all reality, his defense really was fire at that time. And I know that when you knock off Brady, it makes you look a certain way, but is Eli Manning that much different than Joe Flacco? Like one more Super Bowl, I believe. Is he that much different than Nick Foles? Like, I understand that Eli, he made plays and did this and that and had a long career, but I don't look at Eli like a Hall of Famer. So it is what it is. I heard Steve Smith. I don't know Steve Smith's stats off the top of my head, but when I think of Steve Smith, I think of a dog that at the time when he was playing was the top of the league for a very long time in his own way. That was not a Calvin Johnson way, not a Julio Jones way. Like, he had to get it out the mud. So I like that name going into the hat. And then who else do we have?
Earl Thomas. I didn't mention Antonio Gates, Terrell Suggs, Rodney Harrison, and Hines Ward are also on the list.
Okay. Hines Ward, Hall of Famer. Antonio Gates, Hall of Famer. Who else? We had Terrell Suggs, Hall of Famer.
Earl Thomas.
Earl Thomas, for me, I think so. Like, he was at the top of the game for like a handful of years. When I look at a Hall of Famer, I'm like, did he have a really good career? And then was he at the top of his position group or somewhere up there for like an extended period of time? Which I think Earl Thomas was, Antonio Gates was, Terrell Suggs was, Hines Ward. Hines Ward maybe wasn't at the top receiver of all time, like in his group. But I mean, talking about output, winning Super Bowls, like being a kind of like a Steve Smith guy, right? Like Hines Ward and Steve Smith are very similar built. So I like those names. I love Luke Kuechly. Luke Kuechly is a first ballot Hall of Famer, in my opinion. Like one of the most prepared, locked in, dialed linebackers of all time, mixed in with also a dog. The only one that I look at on this list that I'm like, is Eli Manning and maybe Rodney Harrison. Rodney Harrison was a good player, but I think there's safeties that were better than him.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. And obviously these guys get chance after chance after chance, but I do think Eli Manning will be probably the most contentious one. I think you called that out correctly.
There's five each year, right? Like this is this year's list that we get to pick five out of.
Is it five? Is it a set number? I actually don't know how it works.
Yeah, I believe. So it's 4 to 8 each year. If we're going to pick, let's just pick like ones that this year I think should go.
Okay.
Antonio Gates, Terrell Suggs, Adam Vinatieri, Luke Kuechly, Earl Thomas. That's my list.
Okay.
I think it's all right.
That's Kurt's list. I don't know if you have a vote, but like that's always the weirdest thing to me is like the random sports writers are the ones that they get to vote on these things, which
these
means that there's often
coming at me on Twitter.
Exactly. No, I mean, it's exactly right. So it means they hold grudges. It means they have a very different perspective on the game than a coach or a player might. It's always been an interesting setup. In other news, Joe Douglas is out in New York. It seems like every week the Jets have to try to do something that maybe will right the ship, and then they continue to lose football games. I know this isn't a fix, and they're probably just trying to get ahead of their next GM search, but I mean, what does this mean for Aaron Rodgers in New York? What does this mean for the Jets? Because they are, I mean, this has worked out more poorly than anybody could have ever imagined.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to try to make Aaron Rodgers the fall guy, but we're seeing reports now that Woody Johnson hands in the pot a little bit the entire time.
Yeah.
I mean, oh God, this is such an ugly situation for the Jets. And also, how do you, as the players there, show up for work every day, excited with fire, play hard for the people that, like, I don't know. I don't know what the sentiment about the coaching staff was. I don't know what the sentiment about the GM was. But, I mean, they tried to make moves, right? Like, they did try to make moves.
Yeah.
They brought in guys. They were on the short end of the stick for, like, 5 or 6 games this year, where it was like missed field goals and weird stuff like that. If the Jets had an automatic field goal kicker this year, they'd probably be just above 500, which is respectable. They shanked and missed a lot of field goals. I'm not trying to put it on one person, but when you talk about the margin of error in the NFL, missing gimme field goals and losing games because of it, and it adds up, that's really like they were that close. And it just some teams have to win, some teams have to lose. Look at Dallas. Everyone thought Dallas had an okay year. It's all falling apart. If teams are rising, other teams are falling. And it looks like that there's going to be a lot of wasted money in New York, and that maybe Mr. Johnson wasn't the best businessman in all of this.
What do you think this means for Rodgers' future in New York? Because I'm seeing reports now that the Jets might not want him back. It's easy to think that Rodgers might not want to come back to this situation. Yeah. So do you have any insight there?
Man, I mean, I have no insight. I haven't talked to him about it. But if I was him, I wouldn't want to be there. I mean, I would not want to be there. It's a shit storm right now. It's a dumpster fire. It sucks that Davante Adams got traded there, and now like probably going to have to trade him again too. I mean, I don't even know how you navigate that, but maybe you see a couple player trade package in the draft and full reset. But I'm like, you look at guys like Aaron Rodgers, and I'm like, there's some teams that he actually would be better fit for than what this Jets team looks like. Their defense is atrocious. I don't know how their defense ended up so bad this year, because I was definitely high on them. But I don't know, man. And again, Aaron's getting older. His career's winding down. He hasn't had a terrible year statistically. He's led them to points where they could have won a bunch of these games if they just played good defense and kicked field goals. So I don't know. I don't know. Like, guys like Russell Wilson over in Pittsburgh aren't doing much more than Aaron is, if that at all. And they're winning games because their defense is legit and Boswell's the best kicker in the league. So very similar stories, two completely different stacks of teams around these guys. And I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting to see how this one plays out.
Did you see this tweet by Andy Herman, who's a Packers beat writer, about not the likelihood that Aaron Rodgers is going to go to Minnesota, but how not unfeasible it is? Did you see this?
I did not. Please tell me.
Okay, so he mentioned, and I'll get your thoughts on this. He mentions that J.J. McCarthy is obviously the Vikings' future quarterback, but he just had a second procedure on his knee, which isn't ideal. Maybe that alters his timetable. Maybe they want to keep him out another year. I don't know. Maybe that just changes things for 2025. I think Darnold has probably earned himself more than a 1-year deal. That will probably happen with another team. And so if you have a team, you know, the Vikings have proven themselves to be a win now team. They're 8-2. Maybe they could use a bridge quarterback, a veteran quarterback to come in before JJ McCarthy is officially ready to take over the reins.
JJ's going to need another year of development. Like, this year is a wash for his development. Yeah. I do love that, honestly. If I could see Aaron taking the Brett Favre path and go from, you know, one team to another, end up with the same teams. And I think, too, if you look at how the Vikings play offensive football, it's very similar to the Rams. O'Connell's from that tree. It's not a whole lot of movement by the quarterback. It's some boots and stuff that Aaron does well. But it's deep play action, play fake, spit the ball out on RPOs. Like, Aaron could go in and do what Darnold does right now, obviously. And I think that feasibility-wise, like, Darnold's going to have to get paid probably like Baker Mayfield or more. And you're not going to want to pay Darnold for a 2 to 3 year deal when you have McCarthy on his rookie deal. I mean, they are set up for another bridge year quarterback. It's not crazy. It's not crazy to think. And good God, if you have Justin Jefferson receiving passes from Aaron Rodgers, probably going to be decent. I don't hate that at all.
Yeah, I mean, similar setup as with the Jets, where the defense is good, really young offensive core that's talented, except this time you have a offensive leading head coach that has proven to be competent. Yeah, time is a flat circle. It's not crazy.
Dude. It's not crazy at all. And I also think, like, and if you just look at these teams, like, look at some of these quarterbacks that are winning games. A lot of them are not playing better than Aaron is. Aaron's, yeah, he's taken some sacks. He's not as mobile as he once was. But I promise you, next year, Aaron will be more mobile than he is this year if he decides to keep playing. He'll be one more year removed from the Achilles. Like, he's, I don't care who you are, being a year out of an Achilles injury, it's going to be 2 years before you really can, like, do what you want to do. Just like an ACL. Like, the guys after year two of an ACL are typically better than the year one after. I mean, he's obviously got more in the tank with his arm. His legs will be fine. You have guys like Joe Flacco still playing, still slinging around without moving at all. I know he's not starting right now, but I don't know. It's not crazy to think.
I agree. All right, let's get to the games this week. We'll start with San Francisco at Green Bay. This one scares me. It's the Benkert Bowl. It's going to be at Lambeau Field. The Packers are favored by 2. Yep. The Niners are struggling. I mean, I will forever be scared of the 49ers, even if they are struggling. What do you think?
You know, I was in the same boat. I'm like, all right, give the Niners, like, they should have all of the grace to be the team that you think is going to win. They're going to find a way. That's not the Niners anymore, dude. Their offense is getting stagnant. Their scheme is somewhat old now. They haven't renovated it at all. I also think that with Bosa being injured with a groin, who knows if he plays? I doubt that he's going to play. Even if he does play, he could barely walk around on the sideline last week. That's not a guy that you're really concerned about. And then Brock Purdy, he's probably going to play, but he's been day to day early in this week with a shoulder injury. He's not going to be 100%. And I don't know. I'm not scared of the 49ers if I'm the Packers. Packers have found a way to win games in improbable situations. They've closed games out and they know how to win late. The 49ers suck at winning late. They don't know how to close games out. They've been perpetually losing when they should have games in the bag. And now they've got this dark cloud over them of, like, oh shit, if we lose one more, we might end up last in our division this year. How do you go from Super Bowl to last in your division? Well, you play like this. You don't get better on offense. You don't innovate your own scheme. And not to mention, the number one tell in this game for me is the Niners are not going to fix their pass game protections in a week. Brock Purdy does not make audibles at the line of scrimmage. He does not change protections. He doesn't flip or he doesn't slide. He doesn't do any of that stuff because he doesn't have the reins to do that. It's not built into that offense. You saw it last week. You saw it in the Super Bowl. Third down and critical, you blitz the side of the back or blitz the side you anticipate them not sliding to. He's got to throw hot. Doesn't have an answer. I think that's going to come back to bite them again. The Packers know that. They know they don't do that in their scheme. It's a huge red flag. And I also think that Niners aren't ready for the run game that the Packers are going to show them. In Lambeau, I know we've talked about Lambeau Field not being a advantage lately in the past few years. I think this year in Lambeau is going to be different. I think that the cold games in Lambeau with Josh Jacobs' running style, it's going to be a fucking problem for teams. So I would not be shocked to see the Packers start ringing off some of these wins late in the year by just running the football. So that's what I'm looking for this year. It's going to be a cold day in Lambeau. I don't think that the Niners are riding hot right now. I don't think that they're ready for what's going to happen on Sunday. And as long as Jordan Love can hit a few deep shots to play action off these, I think that Josh Jacobs is going to have a day.
I need you to settle my concerns with the defense from last week, because I believe the Bears outgained the Packers. They were well over 300 yards entering the fourth quarter. It seemed like we were getting no pressure on Caleb Williams, a notably bad Bears offensive line, until the last drive of the game. What were you seeing from the defense last week that maybe I shouldn't be as concerned about? Are you concerned about the defense?
Yeah, I'm not concerned. I don't think that it was very characteristic. And again, we had a new week with a new offense coordinator, so new scheme, not much film. Like, they did some things different that they haven't been doing. So on the flip side, the 49ers are very predictable. You know exactly what they're going to do. You know their schemes that they like to run. You know which technique they like to run certain run plays to. And you know their counters off of things. It's just, can you get a beat on them during the game? I think that this game, again, I'm actually not concerned. Even if the Packers lose, which I don't think that they're going to lose, I don't think this is going to be a game where you're like, oh, they could not have won that game. So I don't think there's cause for concern. At this point in the season, the Packers can afford to drop a game or two. They're going to still make the playoffs, even if they just kind of trudge along. But I actually like them to get this game, take care of business, and this could end up being the nail in the coffin for the 49ers. And this, at this point in the season, if the 49ers lose this game, you're going to see some players start to pop up in the injury report, start saving themselves for next year, not making a push. Like, I don't know, man. Watch out for this week. This is going to be a pivotal point in this season.
All right, let's stay in the NFC West. We have Arizona at Seattle. Arizona favored by one on the road. Kyler Murray is balling. This, what you just said about the 49ers, could be the NFC West championship game. I know we still have the Rams in the mix. The Seahawks are such a weird team because they're either a top five team or a bottom five team on any given Sunday. How do you look at this one?
I think this game in general, the Seahawks, when I looked at it earlier on, I'm like, dang, I think the Seahawks could win this game. Like, yeah, they could. And then the more that I looked at it, went back and saw some of the film of what Arizona does, Arizona's going to run this football. Arizona's heartbeat is their offensive line, and they are pounding the rock right now, and James Conner is running the shit out of the ball. And now you have Arizona coming off of a bye week. They've got a little bit of extra rest. The Seahawks barely won a game. They're coming back. Like, they had to put it all out on the line against the 49ers team. And look, say what you want, 49ers, the 49ers hangover is real. Teams lose quite often after playing the 49ers. The Cardinals are rested, and the Cardinals are only being given 1 point this game. Again, Seahawks could win this game. But if I'm going to play the odds, I'm going to play the odds on the Cardinals, rested, running the ball, and playing defense on that side of the ball that is just flying around. And that has been, in my opinion, what Geno Smith struggles against. Geno's great when teams are dropping back and letting him read the field, play 7-on-7. When you got a team like the Cardinals on defense that is flying around guys like Buda Baker causing havoc, I just really think this is another game. The Cardinals should win this game. And if they don't, it's okay. It's not the end of the world, but I like them here.
I love it in the NFC West. Whichever team comes out, and they'll probably only get one team into the playoffs, you could feel super confident about them, or you could feel like they're not going to win a playoff game, just depending on how they're playing recently. They're the most bipolar division.
They are, and that's in my opinion why you have to try to rely on the teams that are winning the line of scrimmage, because that's probably the best tell. The last week's game, the 49ers didn't win the line of scrimmage in the fourth quarter, and that's why they lost. So whichever team can control the line of scrimmage late in the game, that's a team that's going to win the game.
All right, let's close it out with Philadelphia at the Rams. I want to start with this Eagles defense, because they are playing so well. I mean, they're it's righted the ship for them completely. What are you seeing that you like?
Dude, Cooper DeJean, baby. He's balling. And Quinyon Mitchell, balling. These young guys on that defense are stepping up. And not to mention, let's just give the flowers to the GM. He has built a squad. I don't know how the Eagles keep getting away with it. They have talent all over the place. And now the talent's actually playing good football. The talent is winning in situational football, which is a whole nother ball game. And they're closing out games. Now you look on the Rams side, the Rams are starting to creep back a little bit. But if you look back not long ago, less than a month ago, where do the Rams struggle? They struggle when that pocket is collapsing. The Eagles have a defensive line that knows how to collapse the pocket, and their D tackles are an absolute problem. This is not going to be a game that's won, in my opinion, by the defensive ends on the edges. This is going to be a game where Stafford gets pushed with guys back into his lap, and he starts making those errant throws. And the Eagles defense is very opportunistic. So I look at this game as The Eagles have the edge offense first defense of the Rams. And actually, I like the Eagles defense against the Rams offense here. They're going to get their shots. Like, Cooper Kupp's going to make some plays. Puka Nacua is going to make some plays. Kyron Williams is going to probably make some plays. But at the end of the day, give me the Philly D-line to eat, because Stafford's not the most mobile. We've seen it. He'll have some sack fumbles. And give me some pop-up fly balls that these guys are just going to catch in midfield. And I really like a Stafford interception this game.
What does it do to a quarterback when you have a corner like Quinyon Mitchell, like the Eagles have, who in the last 8 weeks has held every wide receiver, and we're talking about guys like Jamar Chase, CeeDee Lamb, Malik Nabers, yeah, Mike Evans, to no more than two catches, and the most yards he's given up is 23 yards to Chris Olave. Is that, as a quarterback, do you just think, I can't throw it to that side of the field? Does it completely remove a receiver from the equation?
It does in situational football. Like, if you are 3rd and 8 and he's playing man, and you just know percentages-wise that, like, he's not a guy you want to attack, then your options are limited. And again, I haven't seen enough of their film to know, is he getting safety help over the top? Is a lot of it zone that's counting as man? Like, I don't really know what the detailed statistics are, but I know that strapping receivers is a good thing for them. And if you look earlier in the year, the main time that he got beat was in situational football. They had that game against the Falcons where his side let the Falcons walk all the way up and down the field with Darnell Mooney. That hasn't really happened anymore. He's grown from that. He's gotten better. So this was never a talent issue. It was a situational positioning issue, and he has dialed that in. So Eagles seem to have found themselves a lockdown DB while also having an absolute dog in the slot, safeties that can make plays, D-line that can eat. This Eagles team, in my opinion, is the second best team in the NFC, and I think that either the Lions or the Eagles are most likely going to the Super Bowl this year.
I want to ask you about this Rams team, and in the context of our conversation about the NFC West, is this a team that you could see being the one to make it out of the NFC West? Stafford's playing good football right now. Over his last 3 weeks, arguably a top five QB, 10 passing touchdowns, 3 picks, over 1,000 yards. It seems like this would be the horse I would bet on, but what do you think?
I would never doubt Stafford, but I actually love the Cardinals. I think that the Cardinals are the team that's going to come out of the West. Kyler Murray has the highest upside out of any quarterback in that division, and he, in my opinion, can change games quicker than any quarterback in that division, and he's the most modern. And I think right now, to beat the defenses, how athletic these D-lines are, like, this formula for the Cardinals is the most sustainable for a playoff run, where I think, yeah, even if the Rams go and make it to the playoffs, I doubt they get past the first round. Like, I don't think they match up player by player over the roster over anybody. But Kyler Murray is that guy that is an X factor that can just completely change the course of a game, even if the guys around him aren't as good. So I think I actually like the Cardinals' longevity over anybody else in this division. We said that earlier in the year, that the Cardinals could be the team to be a riser. And man, if they can close out some of these divisional games, then they'll find themselves in that first spot in the West and in the playoffs.
All right, let's close it out with some picks. We were so close last week. I mean, it was so frustrating. How do we get Travis Kelce? They're down the entire game. We have him at 5, an alt line at 5 receptions, and he only catches 2. How does that make any sense?
It's one of those things where it's like, cool, we made a good bet that didn't win. Like, that's in my opinion. I look at it, would I make the bet again with the same situation? Like, yeah, it probably hits more than 50% of the time, like those types of things. Positive game script for us. They were down. They needed to pass, and they got their other tight ends involved, and Travis Kelce couldn't get open. He was strapped. So, I don't know. Maybe Travis Kelce's just a bad team feeder. Like, he can really cook it up, get his 100-yard games versus, like, the Raiders, but go and play against a good team, and he can't do it. With that, though, you know what time it is. Let me hit my screen recording here. We're going to start this week because we just need to hit. So we're going to go grab passing yards, and I watched a lot of film, guys, a lot of film, and Bo Nix popped off. He's had over 200 yards in every single game in the last 4 weeks. And right now he's playing the Raiders and his line is set at 217. We're going to take that 1.4 at 200. I think there's no way that doesn't hit unless the Broncos just run away with this game. However, look at last week, Tua popped off. Great game against the Raiders. Give me Bo Nix over 200, especially at 1.4. I would have expected that to be like 1.25. I like that. Now, Jared Goff, he's back. He's had 2 big weeks. I think that this line is a little bit weird. I don't like 246 because the game script of how that game might go is Anthony Richardson might run the ball a lot and the clock's going to bleed. So I don't know if we're going to get as many opportunities, but I do like Jared Goff over 200. If his line that Vegas is setting is 247, and he cannot hit 200, that's tough. It just is what it is. So give me 200 there. Same thing. I'm looking at you, Jordan Love. Jordan Love has thrown for 200 yards in every single game this season except for one. That one game was against Jacksonville, where he exited the game with a groin injury. His line is set at 200. He also was hitting 225 quite heavy, but we're going to stay away because we just need a hit. Give me Jordan Love at 200. Now, where else are we looking here? Okay, Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray against Seattle's defense, I think he's going to eat, and we're going to take 1.75. Now, that gives us 2.1x multiplier. We're going to go throw $40 on this bad boy. $40 will pay out $83.60. And I think that this one is my lock of the week to double your money. All of these guys have passing yard lines that are higher than these. We tease them down. They have favorable matchups. And all of these guys, I think, have a chance to hit the actual Vegas lines that are set. So give me four players in four games that I think they handle business. And we just talked about it. We talked about the Packers against the Niners. We talked about Kyler Murray against the Seahawks. So let's go give our guys favorable matchups with favorable lines and go flip this money this week. That's what I got for you, man.
I love it. I love playing alt lines. I've become a evangelist of the alt lines because I'll have friends who will take the alt lines and then tease them up. And they're like, oh, my multiplier just went up to, you know, 70. And I'm like, dude,
no shit. No
well,
shit.
I'm over here doubling my money. Yep. And you're over here losing your money. That's a donation.
Yep. 100%, dude. It's all like, this is the thing, especially at this point in the year, Vegas is so good. Like, let's give Vegas their flowers.
Yeah.
Vegas knows these lines. Vegas gets sharper as the year goes on. They have more data, more analytics, more all this and that. Vegas isn't going to lose. If you're betting the straight up lines against Vegas, Vegas is not going to lose. Historically, Vegas has been in business for a long time. So let's just play the smart play here and go take what Vegas is telling us is 50% going to happen, pull it down, take our favorable matchups. And I'm sorry, like, I would rather pick four teams or four players that like really should have something happen than something that's a toss up with Vegas getting their 10% in the middle every time. I don't know, man. I like it. I love that Sleeper gives us these alt lines. It makes it more fun because I don't feel like I'm playing against the devil.
Right.
I feel like I'm just, all right, let's go scan the board, see my favorite plays of the week, stack them together. I'm not trying to become a millionaire off these picks. I'm trying to just have fun, play the game, and see if my predictions can line up and if I can double my money. That's it. That's the game I'm playing. So if you guys enjoy that game, come play with us. You guys can use code Kurt to get your $1,500 first-time deposit match for a limited time. Normally, it's $100. Right now, it's $1,500. I'm not saying to go put $1,500 on anything. I'm just saying if you want $1,500 free dollars, you put $1,500 into the account. They match you with $1,500. You now have $3,000 to play with. The cool part about this is, too, is to be able to withdraw all that money, which I've done that now. I have taken their bonuses, played them, won, and withdrawn, so I'm free and clear. All you have to do to get that $1,500 actually back to your bank account that they give you is you have to use it and play through credit. So like if you were to put all of the money that they give you and not even the money that you use onto these plays that are doubling, if you hit 50% of them and you double your money and you run through that many amount of plays, you can then withdraw that money. So that's just a little cheat code. But I like it. I love the games that we get to play with Sleeper. I hope you guys enjoyed these videos. Enjoy these videos. We got more coming. And if you have not already, check out the film breakdowns from this week. We had one with Teron Armstead. Was awesome. Dolphin video. We had one with Ninja, who is awesome. Nose ball, Lions fan. And then we also did a Bo Nix one, which was really cool to see how he diced up the Falcons. So we'll see you guys next week. More stuff on the way. Catch you guys next time.